As you might know, I care deeply about stem cell research. In Missouri, you can elect Claire McCaskill, who shares my hope for cures. Unfortunately, Senator Jim Talent opposes expanding stem cell research. Senator Talent even wanted to criminalize the science that gives us a chance for hope. They say all politics is local, but it's not always the case. What you do in Missouri matters to millions of Americans, Americans like me.
It's Michael J. Fox, who suffers from Parkinson's disease, in a TV ad supporting Missouri senatorial candidate Claire McCaskill because of her position on in favor of embryonic stem cell research and Amendment 2. Wesley Smith, how can you look a quivering Michael J. Fox in the eye and tell him that embryonic stem cell research is wrong?
Well, what Michael J. Fox was doing was deceiving the voters of Missouri. Michael J. Fox was not talking about embryonic stem cell research. Of course, you notice he didn't mention the word embryonic. He just said stem cell research. What he was really talking about was human cloning. James Talent, senator from Missouri, and I'm not from Missouri, so I can't vote either way, but he has never argued for outlawing stem cell research. Amendment 2 is something that creates a constitutional right to human cloning. That's what Senator Talent opposes. And the Brownback bill, the federal Brownback bill, which Senator Talent once supported and has not supported now because he feels the wording is wrong, that would not have outlawed stem cell research. It would have outlawed somatic cell nuclear transfer, e.g. human cloning. Human cloning and stem cell research are not synonyms. And Michael J. Fox, using a very emotional appeal, wants people to feel and not think. And therefore, the entire ad is deceptive. Secondly, it's very ironic that to the very day Michael J. Fox issued this deceptive ad, a study came out, and it's certainly not the first of this kind, it's one of many, in which it was found once again that embryonic stem cell research, embryonic stem cells, when injected into living animals, causes tumors. In this particular case, in this experiment, they tried to help Parkinson's disease mice with embryonic stem cells, and instead the mice were getting brain tumors. So there's an awful lot of deception in Michael J. Fox's ad, and it seems to me that if he's going to use his fame and the emotionalism of his disease, he should get the facts right.
Wesley J. Smith is our guest here for this half hour of Issues Etc. He's a senior fellow for the Discovery Institute, attorney for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, and he's authored several books, including A Consumer's Guide to Brave New World. I'm Todd Wilk, and you're listening to Issues Etc. All right, Wesley, someone's going to say, look, who could not be moved by compassion to see this man displaying the symptoms of his disease? If there's anything we can do to help him or people like him, shouldn't we be allowed to try? That's what the proponents of Amendment 2 here in Missouri are saying. Just let us try.
Well, then let's take somebody like Terry Schiavo. What if it was found out, somebody in a persistent vegetative state or diagnosed that way, that if we took some of their brain cells, that might actually help somebody like Michael J. Fox? Should we do that? Or what if it was we found that the best stem cells, and in fact there is some science to support this, the best stem cells for use in the medical treatments would be germ stem cells that can only be created 6 weeks into gestation. Should we create human embryos, gestate them for six weeks, either in a real or artificial environment, and abort them for use of those stem cells? After all, we've got to help Michael J. Fox. You know, these kinds of hyped ads and the hyper-emotionalism are not designed to have us think thoroughly through these very crucial and very important ethical issues. They are designed to get us to forget the concept of morality, principle, and ethics and go rushing in. By the way, this is also about big money. If you all in Missouri decide to vote for Amendment 2, then you're going to find the next step is, well, how can we compete with California if we don't have state funding? California is about to fund this research $3 billion over 10 years. You guys think you can match that?
Yeah, talk about the competition.
I'm going to be spending, I'm a California resident, we're going to be spending $7 billion in interest to fund this research. And you guys over in Missouri, if you say we've got to have a constitutional right to human cloning like California does, the next step is, well, how can we attract the medical researchers if we don't fund it at the state level? That's the next step, and it's beginning to happen in New Jersey. It's happening in New York. They're talking about it in Florida. What the big biotech propaganda machine has done, and they've spent tens of millions of dollars each year to do it, is to create an Oklahoma land race style fight among the states. Oh, we've got to get this research. We've got to get this research. We've got to throw money at these researchers. We've got to have corporate welfare. We've got to pay money to the big biotech companies so they'll come and they'll have jobs and all of that. Well, you know what's really odd is that most biotech is not controversial. Most of what's happening in that sector is wonderful. For example, creating a chemotherapy that is tailored to a patient's individual genetic makeup. So that if, Todd, God forbid, you got cancer and I got the same cancer and we had to have chemo, our chemo would be slightly different based on our individual genetic makeup. Who would be against that? Nobody. That's the future of biotech. This cloning sector is actually a small sliver of the pie, except it's been made into a huge megillah because the science sector and the bioethicists and big biotech and the lobbyists and the vested interests, they don't want anybody telling them, no, you can't have federal money, and they don't want anybody telling them, no, this is immoral.
Speaking of ads, the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures has its newest out, and in its latest ad, it's trying to, at least it says, correct some of the inaccuracies of the opponents of Amendment 2 with the facts. Here's a bit of that ad for your reaction, Wesley.
Sure.
Opponents of Amendment 2 are running deceptive ads. So Missouri experts are speaking out to set the record straight. Here's Dr. Sandra Alum, vice counselor of the Missouri State Medical Association.
Opponents of the stem cell initiative are using misleading scare tactics about women and human eggs. The stem cell initiative strictly bans buying or selling human eggs.
All right. On that simple claim, your response, Wesley?
Well, they leave a huge loophole. Because IVF clinics, which engage in vitro fertilization, are perfectly free to buy and sell human eggs. And then under Amendment 2, you can pay the source of your eggs for their expenses. And therefore, all you have to do is buy them from IVF clinics who buy them from women.
So in other words, it actually permits, the wording of the amendment would actually permit the sale of human eggs as long as there's a middleman.
Basically, yeah, because what it is they allow for payment of expenses, and if these IVF clinics can only get the eggs by paying women, well, that's the way it goes.
All right, here's another so-called correction in this new ad by the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures. This one comes from a former judge.
Here's former Chief Justice of the Missouri Supreme Court, Ann Covington.
I have studied the stem cell initiative. As stated in the official summary, it clearly bans any attempts to clone a human being.
What about that one, Wesley?
Well, the reason they're able to say that is they have redefined the definition of cloning from a scientifically accurate one to a completely inaccurate, false, and political one. Somatic cell nuclear transfer, the act that would be specifically allowed to be a constitutional right in Missouri, is the act of human cloning. That is, it is asexual reproduction, as we've talked about on this show. The act of SCNT creates a human embryo. At that point, the question becomes, what do we do with this embryo that has been created? What Amendment 2 did was redefine the term cloning to mean implantation into a womb. That's not an act of cloning, any more than if in vitro fertilization you took an embryo created in a dish with sperm and egg and then implanted that embryo into the woman's womb. That's not the act of fertilization, is it? So what Amendment 2 has done, and shame on this Supreme Court judge, for buying into a false political definition. You know, Todd, I could say that a stink bug isn't a stink bug, it's a butterfly in legislation. And in that legislation, as long as that legislation was applying, the stink bug would be called a butterfly, but it's still a stink bug.
Okay, then in the final so-called correction in the newest ad from the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures, we hear a by now familiar voice.
And here's former U.S. Senator John Danforth.
The stem cell initiative strictly bans human cloning. It simply ensures that Missouri families will have access to the same stem cell cures that are available to other Americans.
What's your response, Wesley?
Shame. shame on John Danforth. And we've already talked about the cloning issue, but there is nothing in any law in any place that would say that a stem cell treatment available in one state would not be available in Missouri. This is pure deception, and it disrespects the voters of Missouri.
It sounds as though the real goal here, picking up on that subject, and correct me if I'm wrong, is to, as they used to say in the old Westerns, cut them off at the pass. It sounds as though the proponents of Amendment 2 are genuinely afraid that Missourians will come to their senses, and without this amendment, will start to regulate and outlaw human cloning, however, for whatever purpose it's done, and embryonic stem cell research, and they got to have that constitutional amendment to bind the hands of the legislature.
Well, there have been attempts. In fact, I testified in Missouri to outlaw human cloning in that state, but there is no attempt that I'm aware of to outlaw embryonic stem cell research. And remember, those are not the same thing. What the state of Missouri wanted to do, the legislators who proposed this, that is the same thing that the United Nations has urged in the General Assembly by a 3-to-1 margin that all member states do, outlaw all human cloning. France has outlawed all human cloning. You can't say that France is this religious conservative state. Canada has outlawed all human cloning. Canada is San Francisco as a country, for goodness sakes. These countries understand that human cloning is intrinsically unethical and violative of the intrinsic dignity of human life, and that cloning for research, which is what Amendment 2 wants to create a constitutional right about, creates human life for the purpose of destroying it. Therefore, the proponents of Amendment 2 are actually going against the grain of the United Nations and many states in this, countries in this world. 8 states in this country have outlawed all human cloning, and the other deception from the pro-Amendment 2 types is that this will cost us billions of dollars, and it'll destroy our ability to attract biotech businesses. Michigan outlawed all human cloning. Michigan is one of the most vibrant states in biotech in the country. So the entire amendment is thoroughly deceptive, disrespectful of democracy, and, in my view, contemptuous of the Missouri voter, because it is trying to pull the wool over their eyes, tell them a fiction so that they will support human cloning in the guise of opposing it.
I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc., and we're coming to you live this Tuesday, the 24th of October, talking with Wesley Smith. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Wesley Smith joins us as we're talking about Amendment 2. Coming up 2 weeks is Election Day, and that means Missouri voters will be facing this issue in those 2 weeks. Wesley, this brings us to the latest, and I think this is the official endorsement from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch here in St. Louis, in favor of Amendment 2. And late in their editorial, their op-ed piece on Amendment 2, they say that the opponents of Amendment 2 are raising groundless fears. You wrote an entire book about the Consumer's Guide to the Brave New World. Is it all groundless fears? Are you just a fear-monger, demagogue?
I'm a fear-monger and I'm alarmist, Ted. Todd, I just want to scare people so I can make a lot of money on selling my books. You know, I've read this St. Louis Post-Dispatch editorial, and it's full of beans. If this is the best they can do in terms of journalism, I'm worried about that newspaper. For example, they say that Amendment 2 would allow human beings to be cloned. Untrue. They've attempted to ban a technique that someday could be used in embryonic stem cell treatments. The technique cannot be used in embryonic stem cell treatments. The technique creates a human embryo. That embryo could be later used in embryonic stem cell treatments, but not the technique of somatic cell nuclear transfer. They've gotten their facts wrong. That's journalistic malpractice. Let's take another issue. The Stowers, this is from the editorial. The Stowers Institute put a major expansion plan on hold for the first time, funded work by scientists whose labs are outside of Missouri. That's correct, because they're engaging in political extortion. To extort the people of Missouri, you either do what we say or we leave the state. You know, if big oil came into a state and said, you either pass a law that we want or we leave the state, or if big pharma came in and said, you either pass a law that we want or we leave the state, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch editorial writers would be up in arms. And because big biotech does it, I don't see what the difference is. And by the way, most of Missouri's Amendment 2 has been funded by one man, James Stowers, has put about $20 million into this. It's like one man. What do you get the man who has everything? Why, his own constitutional amendment. Most of the time, the liberal media will decry the power of money in politics, except with Amendment 2. Then it's okay.
Then, I think this was in today's paper, the headline reads, Amendment 2, the pros and cons of the stem cell initiative, a yes and a no, pro and a con. And on the pro side for Amendment 2, Marie Davis, who is the executive director of the Metro St. Louis Greater Missouri Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, raises two issues I want your response to. Actually, three. First of all, the subtitle of her side of the piece says, it would let scientists do their job and ensure Missourians access to any cures. And that little particle there, any, seems to me to open the door to an awful lot of things that even the proponents of Amendment 2 may not be thinking of right now.
Well, if anybody thinks that Amendment 2 and the embryonic stem cell research cloning issue is going to stop with early embryos, I've got a bridge here in the San Francisco Bay I'd like to sell them. New Jersey has already legalized human cloning, implantation into wombs, and gestation through the ninth month, in other words, fetal farming. And that attempt has been mimicked in six or seven other states, and they haven't passed those bills, but they tried. And the second thing is, there is any medical treatment that would be available in any state would be available to the people of Missouri, for goodness sakes. This idea that somehow they're opening up cures that would not otherwise be available is so bogus.
Let's talk with a couple of our listeners here. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Paul calls from his car. Paul, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. I just wanted to mention that within the past week or so, a small newspaper size mailing, full color, four pages, was sent out using photographs of veterans. I don't even know if they were veterans that were supporting this or just stock photographs that people used without permission, with the claim that 14,000 Missouri veterans want a yes vote for Amendment 2. And other than the fact that I know that the science is bad, that it's ethically and morally wrong, as a disabled veteran, and you know me, Todd, I have multiple disabilities from my military service, I don't want to be called a baby killer again. And I don't want anyone telling veterans that they should vote for this thing because it will help veterans. And that's what this four-page, very expensive, obviously very expensive mailing to, the general population went out to.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Let's get to Wesley's reaction.
That's very interesting. You know, they're trying to turn the show-me state into the clone-me state. And the amount of money being spent on this campaign, and in specific and in general, the tens of biotechnological industry organization, the lobbying group for this industry, is spending tens of millions of dollars each year to propagandize people into supporting this research. They're changing definitions. They're blurring words. It's a classic propaganda campaign. They're leading with emotion and hype, as in the Michael J. Fox ad. And now to say it's about veterans? Good grief. That's shameful. And people in the state of Missouri, I hope, are sophisticated enough to know when their chain is being yanked.
Another Paul calling from another car phone. Paul, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. Question for Wesley. An argument I heard recently, you're familiar, Todd, with 97.1 FM Talk, I think. Dr. Randy Tobler, who's local here, he's a physician, he's pro-life, and throw the boot, if I'm not mistaken, but was actually recently defending Amendment 2, and he was arguing that the product of SCNT isn't exactly the same as a human embryo that is brought about by natural fertilization, because, to use his language, it's not the product of the love of a man and a woman.
That's
well,
interesting.
That's first off, that's not science. I don't know what that is. That's gobbledygook. because if you took a look at a cloned embryo and made through cloning, which, by the way, they haven't been able to do yet, despite many efforts and hundreds of millions of dollars of attempts, if you looked under a microscope, you would not be able to tell the difference between a cloned embryo, one made through cloning, and an embryo made through the somatic cell nuclear transfer process. And I'm looking through my papers now for statements made by James Thompson. James Thompson is the fellow who first derived embryonic stem cells, and he was asked by MSNBC whether or not what the caller just described is true, whether or not this really isn't an embryo. And I'm not finding it in my papers, but what he said was, to state that is disingenuous, that an embryo created by somatic cell nuclear transfer develops the same as a natural embryo and looks the same under a microscope as the embryo, and therefore to claim it is not an embryo is disingenuous, and that's a polite word for it. What that fellow was saying on the radio is gobbledygook and junk biology.
Wesley, can you give us about 5 minutes on the other side of this break?
I don't think so.
Then I got one more question for you. This is from, again, that St. Louis Post-Dispatch pro and con. The Marie Davis writes this, people of faith can respectfully disagree on different aspects of this initiative. Indeed, people who oppose stem cell research can voluntarily refuse treatments that emerge from this new science. Wow, she just let everybody off the hook. How would you respond to that argument? You've got a minute.
We're not talking about embryonic stem cell research again. We are talking about legalizing human cloning. And this is part of the propaganda campaign to take things that are not synonyms, to take things that are different, to take a stink bug and pretend it is a butterfly. It is deceptive, it is disrespectful of democracy, and it is profoundly misleading.
Folks, stay informed on these issues, bioethical, by visiting Wesley J. Smith's website. It's www.wesleyjsmith.com, wesleyjsmith.com. Wesley is a senior fellow for the Discovery Institute. He's an attorney for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. He's got a great blog with a brilliant title, Secondhand Smoke, that you can also read there. And he's also author of several books, including A Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World. Wesley, it's always a pleasure, and I hope not too many of your tax dollars get wasted in California on these unethical things.
Hey, vote no on Amendment 2, and maybe I'll move to Missouri to get away from it.
Hey, that would be nice. I'd like to have Wesley around a little bit more. Thanks for being our guest.
Thanks, Todd.
Well, when we come back from this break, we've got audio open lines. Wesley couldn't stick with us, but you can. We're going to turn the subject toward a new church that has abandoned all pretense of even being a church. They don't even call themselves a church anymore. They call themselves a soul factory, whatever that means. We'll find out on the other side of this break. They've also abandoned all pretense of any kind of semblance of a worship service. You know, you walk into most of these avant-garde, so-called cutting-edge churches, as they like to think of themselves, and you get pretty much the same kind of stuff, 20, 30 minutes of praise music with a praise band of varying degrees of professionalism, and you get a preacher who'll talk to you for 45 minutes about any subject, usually any subject other than Jesus Christ and Him crucified, for another 45 minutes, and then you wind down and cool down and afterglow with some more music, and you go home. Well, the Soul Factory's got something else going on. They got music, but it's a concert, and they've got people talking, but it's more like theater. That's how they've designed it. We'll find out about it after this.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Issues, Etc. guest, Dr. Arthur Just, on the Good Shepherd Institute, November 5th through 7th, on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We are dedicated to hearing and discerning the clear voice of Jesus, the Good Shepherd, through our attention to the preaching, the historic liturgies, the catechesis, and the hymns of the church that communicate Christ. We hold a yearly conference during All Saints weekend, in which we explore these things. We're particularly interested in serving congregations and parishes, parish pastors, musicians, and other church workers, and also helping the laity to come to love and appreciate the treasures of our Lutheran faith and our Lutheran liturgy and our Lutheran life.
Join Issues Etc. as we broadcast live from the Good Shepherd Institute, November 5th through 7th at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. For more information, look for the Good Shepherd Institute logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. First, it was pro-gay ruling in Boston that forced Catholic Charities to exit the adoption business. Now, the New York Supreme Court is forcing a similar religious group to fund contraception in their health care plans. Terry Phillips reports pro-life advocates are on edge, wondering what the government will require them to do next.
It is against the teaching of the Catholic Church to use contraception. Kiara McCaffrey, with the Catholic League, says that puts religious charities in a tough spot.
They can choose not to provide any prescription drug coverage, but as we all know, especially with many religious institutions, part of their mission is to provide adequate wages and take good care of their employees.
Larger ministries can protect themselves by self-insuring, which exempts them from state laws like the one in New York. But small groups may have to look for other ways to help their employees without betraying their Christian beliefs.
It's a problem for many groups to help them pay for it in other ways because it's easier and it's cheaper to get these group discounts and to cover it in that sort of sense, where if a person wants to do it as an individual, it's not as cost effective.
Carrie Gordon Earle with Focus on the Family Action says it's just another example of the government trying to tell religious nonprofits what they can and cannot do. If they continue to take state and federal money, they may very well have to make some tough decisions in the future.
As hard as some of these issues are being pushed by people on the left, the day may very well come that all religious nonprofits really have to look seriously at defending themselves against this type of encroachment on their religious liberties.
Some are encouraging Catholic Charities to take the New York decision all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. For Family News in Focus, I'm Terry Phillips.
Pro-life advocates argue the unanimous ruling reflects the beginning of a new trend that targets churches and forces them to pay for abortions. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
On the next Focus on the Family, Dr. James Dobson interviews best-selling author and political
commentator. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't teach it to our young children. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for October is titled The Apostles' Creed. For more information, call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or visit our website, issuesetc.org. The Apostles' Creed costs $9.99 plus shipping and handling. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org. The Apostles' Creed.
On the next Focus on the Family, Dr. James Dobson interviews best-selling author and political commentator Ann Coulter. Together, they discuss the issues and the falsehoods of embryonic stem cell research, the true definition of pro-life, Darwinism, and the truth about global warming. Coming up on the next Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., Dorcas, Lydia, and Phoebe, names you may not recognize, but they are there in the New Testament. Dr. Peter Scare of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be our guest to talk about those three female saints of the New Testament. Speaking of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, we're going to be up there pretty soon for the Good Shepherd Institute, early in November, broadcasting live from the Good Shepherd Institute. You can find out more about that event and our live broadcast from Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, by going to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. When you click the link at our homepage, you'll get all sorts of information about the Good Shepherd Institute, all the particulars on it, and a way to register for the Institute. There's also a number you can call at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, area code 260-452-2256. Ask about the Good Shepherd Institute. Well, we'll be broadcasting live. It is 260-452-2256. We've got audio open lines ahead for your questions and your comments for the next half hour, going into the third hour as well. But we've been sitting on this a day or two because we've had other things to talk about. We had to get to it sooner or later. It's a CNN story on a new church that's calling itself, I don't even want to say church. I'm going to scratch that off. Take out my Sharpie, and I scratch out church. It's a new something. I don't know what it is. And here's the basic question. Is this church or not? They call themselves the Soul Factory. And as I said before the break, they've abandoned all pretense of thinking about or describing themselves as a church, or even on Sunday morning doing anything resembling a church. It is, to me, it looks like a theater group or a concert venue. Now, I want your answer to two questions after you hear this short CNN story on the Soul Factory. Listen carefully and then answer these questions for me, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Since the emphasis here in the Soul Factory, as you'll hear, is so heavily on drama, skits, plays, drama, is drama in worship God-pleasing? I'm not talking about feeling dramatic. I'm talking about the skits, the plays, the little vignettes that are performed in so many churches. Is drama in worship God-pleasing? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, if you're a proponent of drama in worship, where would you draw the line? On Sunday morning, if you walk in and you see in the service bulletin or up on the big screen, oh, we got drama today, goody, and you're clapping your hands, where would you draw the line? I mean, there's drama as an element of Sunday morning, and then there's what the Soul Factory is doing. Where would you say, enough is enough, that's crossed the line? And do you think the Soul Factory's crossed the line? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. A group puts theater into religion, or maybe the other way around. It's hard to tell to reach its audience. Here's the CNN story about the Soul Factory.
You are now walking into the Soul Factory.
It's not the traditional place of worship. The sanctuary is a theater setting. The pulpit, a stage, where life's issues are dealt with by melding biblical principles and the arts. Deron Cloud, founder and pastor of the Soul Factory, calls it the unchurch.
I think the Soul Factory is the place where people can come and be themselves and not become controlled by a religious system that wants them to conform to the traditions that are really not working.
We die like, we groove like. One, two, three. What?
Cloud and his wife, Jill, opened the first Soul Factory more than a decade ago in the Washington, D.C. area. The two began writing, producing, and performing on stage using real-life situations as their script.
So are you going to talk my role, your part, and my part?
You said your mind wasn't going
to
do it.
They were overwhelmed by the response, and it was then they realized the need to establish a place where people could experience God while learning, as they put it, how to deal with being human from the inside out.
We realized that our productions definitely sort of brought in a social truth. And I think that people really want the truth. Social truth meaning people wanted to hear things the way they lived it.
Then came the Soul Factory.
So that you understand the Soul Factory Theater, Christ said, let us make disciples. Well, we just took that same scripture and we said we are the factory and we actually make souls. We actually remanufacture souls, or we get used to remanufacture souls.
There's no such thing as a typical church service at the Soul Factory.
This past service, I put on a clown makeup to talk about how many preachers are turned into clowns in order to get the offering. And so I had on wigs and the whole nine yards trying to show they'll do whatever they can to get that money because they got to pay them bills.
And it's not unusual for Deron to fire up the Batmobile for a drive. He owns one of the original Batmobiles from the 60s. He even compares himself to the Caped Crusader.
Batman was the first superhero that didn't have superhero powers, but he still fought for justice. And all I do is fight for injustice and fight for the freedom of people, meaning their mindsets, so that they can be free and live out their destiny.
The Soul Factory isn't bound by walls. Members get together and hit the streets.
We literally take our budget, I would say about 40% of our budget, maybe 45% of our budget, goes to outreach to help people.
They give out groceries, pay for gas. They've even stormed laundromats where they've doled out quarters for folks to wash their clothes.
If anything, what I would hope would be that the Soul Factory would be a place that could reignite their passion to want to be spiritual, to reignite their passion to believe that you can come to church and wear your nose ring, your earring, or your tattoo. God is still going to love you. He's still going to be with you.
Tony Harris, CNN, Atlanta.
All right, I want to know what you think about the Soul Factory. I think it's fair to say that it has abandoned all pretense of being a church. It still thinks it's doing the mission of the church somehow. The guy riding around in his Batmobile? I got to admit, I'd love to have the Batmobile, but I think the most appropriate place for it is in the Veterans Day Parade. Grow up. So, do you think this is an example of a church that decided that drama was so good, that the concert venue was so good, and so much better than anything else that was happening in church, that they just gave up all pretense of doing anything else other than drama and music? That's it. Are you in favor of it? Do you think it's God-pleasing? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Look, it was bound to happen sooner or later. For about 30 years now, what happens on Sunday morning has been governed by frustrated rock and rollers. You know, people who weren't good enough to make it into a decent garage band or get a recording contract. So they go to church and they use that captive audience there. It was bound to happen sooner or later that the church would be governed by frustrated thespians, theater majors, who couldn't make it on television or get a commercial gig. So they just take it into the church and act on stage. I mean, is that what Sunday morning's for? That's for us to live out our fantasies on stage? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. And if you're in favor of something like the Soul Factory, is there any place where you would draw the line and say, well, okay, that's gone too far? I'd like to hear from you. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. It's audio open lines. We're coming to you live this Tuesday, the 24th of October, on Issues Etc. And our call-in numbers, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk with David first. He's calling from his car. Hi, David.
Hey, I thought the most obvious irony there was that he wanted to make a comment about pastors who act like clowns in the pulpit, and so he dressed up like a clown.
That's ironic.
Yeah, the irony was thick, I thought.
You should have seen the video, too. He actually put on the clown makeup on stage, you know, kind of actually, a Marcel yeah. Marceau thing going on there.
Well, I've seen that done before, at least online, so I guess I'm not too surprised. But, you know, you would think there would be better ways of mocking pastors who act like clowns than to actually put on a clown outfit yourself in the pulpit.
Well, thank you very much, David. It's great that you would point out the irony there. The church has become the pop Christianity, in some cases like the Soul Factory, maybe it has become a parody of itself. It's impossible to satirize it anymore because it's actually funny without even satire. Don't you think? There are points when things get pushed so far that you can't satirize them anymore. You can't do it. Because you say, okay, let's satirize the poppy American Christianity. You do it, and then suddenly you find out, oh, wait a minute, that's not satire. That's truth. Someone is doing it. Truth is stranger than fiction. Dennis calls from his car. Hi, Dennis.
Hello, Pastor Todd. How are you today?
I'm doing well.
I pick up a little bit different message from listening to that, that soundbite.
What was that?
Well, I think that the gentleman... obviously, he's a reactionary to some bad experiences that he's had, either in the Pentecostal or the Baptist experience that he's had. You know, and apparently, there's a lot of other people out there that probably feel the same way. I guess I would like to ask a question to this person when he talked about they wanted to get away from traditions. I wasn't quite certain what traditions he was making reference to, if it was the Lutheran Protestant tradition or the Pentecostal or Baptist tradition, because the preachers that I think that he was making fun of are probably more of those the Baptist or the Pentecostal types. So
all right.
I think that's worth listening to in terms of his message. I don't know whether it's church or not or what his intention is, but I think that his intention, he's struggling to an answer and to apply Christianity to his daily life, but maybe that's reflective of the failure of the church.
All right, Dennis, thank you very much. Okay, a couple of thoughts there before I go back to the phones. You say, we're going to abandon all these, he says, a religious system and traditions that don't work. That was the phrase used by the pastor of the Soul Factory. I don't even know if he thinks of himself as a pastor. What, lead thespian? Star of the show? I think if you're using the theater analogy.
Unpastor.
Unpastor, that's what it was. He stole my term. I thought I'd copyrighted unchurch. I wrote an article for Modern Reformation magazine last year where I searched the internet hard to see if someone had used the term unchurch before. And I wrote that article the forgiveness-driven church or something like that, but I coined the phrase in there, the unchurch. Churches that are trying so hard not to be church that they stop being church. You know, sometimes you get what you wish for. This is going to be a church that's not like the church. And if you pursue that to its end, you will end up with something that isn't the church, like maybe the Soul Factory. But it would be helpful to know what traditions he's reacting against. And by the way, I have to point out that the pastor of the Soul Factory, perhaps without intending to do so, is creating his own traditions. Jeff calls from his car. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, guys. How are we doing?
Doing well.
You know, I hear your side, and I also agree with the point that the previous caller made about defining what traditions he's referring to. But I have a part of me that would sit there and go, okay, I'll wear clown makeup or I'll drive the Batmobile if I know that it will save a soul, or in turn, a person will receive salvation.
How would I got to just ask though, because I understand your sentiment. I do, Jeff. How would driving the Batmobile through town save a soul?
You know, in the same way that maybe a pastor giving a children's sermon and uses a box with an object lesson inside of it. It's just grabbing the attention of somebody who you wouldn't grab an attention for.
Well, that grabs attention, but how does it save a soul? I can get attention by taking off my clothes and walking through the campus of Concordia Seminary, but just doing that while it grabs attention doesn't save anybody.
No, because only the Holy Spirit gives the gift of faith.
Yeah, but
you and I both know that.
Right, but the Holy Spirit gives the gift of faith through the explicit proclamation of Christ crucified. Now, I would be willing to grant that if the Batmobile garners attention so that someone might actually, say, do something as old-fashioned and traditional as preaching the gospel, then the gospel will save souls, but driving the Batmobile can never do anything more than get you attention, right?
Yeah, and I'm not saying that the Batmobile would save the soul itself. I'm saying that if we drive a Batmobile, or if we dress up as a clown, or let's say we wear traditional garb and we dress up as Paul one Sunday, or we dress up as an apostle, or as any of the apostles or the prophets, and we deliver a sermon, the only reason we're doing that is so that we receive the attention of people, and that maybe just for a little bit longer we can allow the Holy Spirit to work through the words that we preach. In a lot of ways, it's no different than a prophet binding his hands and walking around in front of the assembly, or how many of the other prophets in the Old Testament, and the minor prophets especially, used themselves as the illustration for the message they were bringing.
Well, they were commanded by God to do that explicitly. Thanks for the call, Jeff. I mean, they were the illustrations that they used, they were commanded by God to use. And now, I don't even think Duran at the Soul Factory claims to have been commanded by God to do these things. Maybe he does. I don't know. It wasn't part of the CNN piece. I want to hear from you on the issue of drama in worship, taken to its extreme, if you would, where worship is gone and it's all drama in the Soul Factory. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, I've heard Jeff's arguments before, and I do have a certain sympathy with the fact that there are things that will draw attention. But where do you draw the line? And I want to call people out on that. I've talked with people who say, whatever works, we'll use it. Which is, I think that's Jeff's argument. To get people's attention. Whatever works. But they don't really mean whatever. I mean, they don't mean whatever. Whatever is the broadest possible assembly of things you could imagine. I mean, whatever includes everything, anything, doesn't it? So everybody's got a place where they draw the line in the sand. Even those who are in favor of going as far as, say, this unchurch, the the Soul Factory has gone, abandoning all pretense of church or of anything explicitly Christian to somehow save souls. I don't know how that's going to work without the message of the gospel, because that's part of the tradition, you know. Even those who say, hey, that sounds like a good idea, they've got a line someplace. Everybody does. Tim calls from St. Louis. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Pastor Wilkin. How are you?
I'm doing well.
I have three basic comments on this story that I just heard. The first thing is, you had asked, you know, is this even a church? I would say absolutely not. I don't believe there's a place for this during the actual service. Now, if a church wants to have something like this in the evening or on a Sunday night or something, I don't see any problem in that. But as the main service, you know, as the divine service, I don't believe that it is appropriate.
Okay.
My second comment is that you briefly touched on this man as the lead thespian, or you said he may not even be a pastor. But for me, another reason why it would be unacceptable is because of a lack of theological training all around, you know, to be a pastor. I doubt if he knows Greek and Hebrew. I shouldn't assume, but, you know, that would be another thing. Is he equipped to lead a church or lead a congregation in this way?
Okay, Tim, I understand your concern on the second point, but and stick with me for a second here.
Sure.
There are an awful lot of pastors out there who are trained in Greek and Hebrew, who do have, you know, bona fide degrees from good seminaries, who have been duly and rightly ordained, who are still pulling this kind of nonsense. So I think that concern, while it may be true in the case of the pastor or the star of the show at the Soul Factory, it may be true, it may not be true. Just having a guy up there who is theologically trained doesn't necessarily mean he's going to use that training. He may just well forget it or abuse it.
That's unfortunate, though, I guess.
Very unfortunate. Tim, thank you for the call. All right, let's see what Joe has to say, calling from West Bend, Wisconsin. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Todd. I have to disagree with your previous two callers, and I disagree on multiple grounds. One being the Corinthians text that sometimes is quoted by people, be a fool for Christ, but that means that the world views you as foolish because you hold to the resurrection, the death, and so on of Christ. But then we have the Lord's account of Lazarus and the rich man, and as the rich man is burning in hell, he begs Father Abraham to send back Lazarus to his brothers to keep them from ending up in hell. And Abraham says, no. He says, no, they have Moses and the prophets. Let him hear them. And he said, no, Father Abraham, but if one goes to them from the dead, they will repent. But he said to them, if they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rise from the dead. These gimmicks and schemes will not convert a soul. They will only attract gawkers.
Joe, thank you for the call. Yes, a dead man rising from the dead would definitely draw attention. But at least according to Jesus, when he tells that parable, if they won't listen to God's word... We don't know whether God's word is actually being proclaimed at the Soul Factory. We know they're doing a lot of drama, and they're talking about a lot of Christian principles. Unless one hears God's word, it's not going to do any good. That kind of requires that the word be preached. I think Paul said something about that at one time. How are they? Faith comes by hearing, hearing by the word of Christ. And how will they hear unless someone preaches to them? You know, this is, permit me a moment to mount my soapbox. One of the premises of all this chicanery and foolhardiness as goes on Sunday mornings in churches is that, hey, God never told us how to do it. He just told us to do it. So however we do it is good. That's what my daughter pulled on me the other night. We're sitting at dinner. I'm chiding her for something. And her response to me, typical 15-year-old response, is, it's all good. It's all good. Sounds kind of snotty coming from a 15-year-old, doesn't it? Because it's a dismissive comment. She's basically saying, I don't care what you think. It's all good. Well, is it all good? Is it really true that Jesus told us to do it, but he didn't tell us how? I thought Jesus said that the repentance and the forgiveness of sins would be preached in his name until the end of the world. And he sent out his disciples to proclaim this, to baptize and to teach. He certainly did tell us how to do it. And the church that abandons the how usually also abandons doing it. Did the Apostle Paul say that God had chosen to save the world by the foolishness of drama or clown makeup? Or by the foolishness of what we preach, Christ and Him crucified? Harold calls from St. Charles. And by the way, Tim was on the line before, and I inadvertently cut him off before he had a chance to make his third point. And Tim, if you want to make that point, happy to hear from you. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. In the meantime, let's talk with Harold from St. Charles. Hi, Harold.
Yes, Pastor. Maybe you've covered this already, but back in the Middle Ages, you had your dramas there at the church there to educate the laity who were not educated. They had these plays and that, but it seemed like nothing like today. This is part of that church growth stuff there, and it is like the music in the church. We just returned recently from Australia, and several of the congregations, they were just like rock concerts. You could hear them half a mile away almost when you approach the church, and there was just so much noise, and it was just an out-and-out abomination. So these plays there today, I see no need for them, especially, you know, people can read and they're educated more today. But back Middle Ages, you know, they used that method. But
thank you. Thanks, Harold. Well, I'm thinking about this great Oberammergau Passion Play that's been going on for 600 years or whatever. This town that puts on this Passion Play every 4 years over in Germany. But it is a Passion Play. It's not just a play. Why don't we do a different play this year? Try that, to go over to those people who were saved from the Black Plague, from what they believed by the divine intervention of God, and say, hey, instead of Passion Play this time around, you folks of Oberammergau, why don't you put on a play about, oh, a husband and a wife arguing over the finances? That's more relevant, isn't it? You kind of see the contrast, don't you? Or maybe you don't. It's Audio Open Lines. When we come back from this break, a little bit more on a different subject. I'd like to hear from you on this one still on the other side of this break. If worship is not about entertainment, then why not request your praise band that they move to the back of the church? Maybe up to the balcony if you still got one, and see what kind of response you get. If it's not about frustrated rockers who had the garage band when they were in high school, never really made anything of it, but now that they've got the church on Sunday morning, rock on. If it's not about that, about the performance, about the entertainment, ask them to move to the back of the church where no one can see them and see what kind of response you get. Five zero five seven eight fifty one eight hundred seven three zero two seven two seven. I mean, everybody's talking about why we're doing this, and let's make sure that we're all doing this for Jesus. Hey, I'm all for doing everything for Jesus. Let's do it for Jesus. So let's, if we're doing it for Jesus, let's give Him the spotlight. I just know that if we're standing in the spotlight, strumming our guitars, or doing whatever we're doing, up on stage, strutting back and forth, our brief moment on the stage, sound and fury signifying nothing, Jesus isn't in the spotlight. We leave the spotlight on Jesus Christ. We don't send Him back into the wings or ask Him to come out occasionally. Maybe during intermission you can go back and meet Him backstage. No, He deserves to be front and center all the time, and His cross for sinners as well. Be right back.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.